This is the No Dogma Podcast. I'm Brian Hogan, and this morning I'm joined from Berlin by Peter Wegemann, independent consultant, author, and speaker on healthcare IT and the digital society. Thanks for joining me, Peter.
Welcome.
Peter, can you tell me a little bit about your background?
Okay. I have been the privacy and security advocate between the 1980s and 1998. I have been lecturing on the need for data security and privacy issues. I have been asked to testify in Congress during the late 80s. And I have been a global expert on electronic health record systems for about 40 years. I was CEO of a medical records institute based in Boston for 25 years. And most importantly, I was chair of the Health Informatics Standards Board of the American National Standards Institute, where I was in charge or was chairing all standards organizations from security to anything else in healthcare.
I didn't know such a body existed. Can you tell me a little bit about what they did?
Well, it tries to coordinate between the many standards organizations. You might know of HL7, you might know of DICOM standards, you might know of different communication standards, security standards, and the American National Standards Institute is trying to coordinate all of those on a voluntary basis. So I was chair of it for 8 years. It's quite a job to try to make peace among all these competing standards organizations.
I'm going to have to ask you, what does a voluntary standard mean?
Well, we have some standards in healthcare which have been regulated or have been mandated by the government, but the majority of standards on which our healthcare system works is on voluntary standards. That means standards which are developed by committees where people are saying, we want to send DICOM images or X-ray images around in a certain way that all the companies can access it, can read it, and so on.
We're going to generally talk about security. And I know you have had changing views on that field, sorry, security in the medical field. Can you maybe give an overview of how you perceive security in the medical field right now, and then maybe we'll talk about how you used to look at it?
Yes. Security is a very wide field, and most people are not aware of what's involved. I just want to give your listeners a little overview. It includes safeguarding information flow from a chain of trust, end-to-end point of access security, stewardship, including wireless security, including guarding accountability, authentication, synchronization, device authentication. All of those, in each one, we could almost spend an hour. And it goes on and on to protecting and guarding data function communications. Again, a very different field. It means establishing and monitoring measures for accountability, so you really know which doctor has written what or has done what, and so on. And it goes on into backup recovery, emergency operations, and so on. These are just tiny parts of a wide, difficult piece. At the bottom of all of this in security is safeguarding private, personal, and protected information, what we want to talk about. It's really a minor part of the whole security field.
But it's the one that gets the attention, because the thing you hear about are the privacy breaches. You're not going to hear about, you know, the communication standards that are maybe not as good as they should be. It's when information is lost or made public.
Most people think it's very difficult to keep information private, that much as we read in newspapers and in the press, quite a bit of all the violations. But interesting enough, that the Office of the National Coordinator, ONC, in Washington, where all health IT, healthcare IT issues are being monitored, is saying that about 70% of the population of patients believe that the privacy is adequate. Only about 30% are worried about it. Out of those, 15% are somewhat worried about. About 12% are very worried about. And some people are not even providing information to their doctors because they really think it could harm them.
Sorry, what was that last percentage?
The last percent actually is 3%, I'm sorry.
Okay, 3% of people are unwilling to provide accurate information to doctors because of security concerns. It's a small but significant number.
Now, if you compare that to what the press says, in the December 15 issue of Forbes, they talked about 112 million records had data breaches in 2015. And if you look at the details of those, you see that most of them are large databases which have been hacked, and then in some cases a laptop has been stolen, or there has been some situation that a CD has been lost, and then we are talking about a couple of 100,000 names and details on one document.
I was going to ask you, is the industry as secure as they claim to be? But maybe the better question is it as insecure as the media thinks?
Well, it depends really what you consider the major harm. Definitely there are situations where information is being hacked. Definitely there's information where some of the CDs are being lost. One case I might refer to a couple of times in the session is one doctor I know in Boston whose car was broken into and the CD was stolen and all of the contents were stolen. Now the CD had many thousands of patients' names and diagnosis on there. And this was considered as a major violation. Now people think if someone gets such a CD, that who knows what can happen. But that is what we need to talk about, that quite often there is very little harm done by someone getting such information.
I presume it's highly unlikely that the information would have been encrypted. I presume that's what's implied.
Even if it is that anyone can read it, if someone on the street in Boston or in Somerville can read that Peter Wegemann has a certain diagnosis, it doesn't help them. They cannot make money out of it. They cannot, unless you know someone specifically. If you go through a whole list and you try to find out of 500,000 someone you know, that could be a violation, a real violation with potential harm or embarrassment.
Absolutely, yeah. But I suppose, you know, unless there was a targeted instance where for some reason someone knew the doctor happened to have that CD and there happened to be a few people on that list that the thief was interested in, the data may be in effect almost unreadable if it happens to be stored in a database file or in some format that you need medical software in order to read. The thief was probably looking for a phone more than a CD anyway.
But if you look at it in general terms, I went in the 80s and 90s throughout the country and internationally and taught in lectures that if someone violates the privacy, that people are not able to get health insurance, which is still possible today, although the Affordable Care Act is trying to eliminate that. The second one is that people could lose money. And there have been anecdotal stories that people thought they might even lose their houses because someone found out that they had a disease and didn't get a mortgage or whatsoever. People have lost their job or were not able to get the job because the HR department had found out about someone's illness. People are embarrassed if someone else finds out, someone who knows them, what is going on, and then there are potential additional damages. So all of this is in general terms the background why people are so afraid what could happen when information is being released or if there is a violation of privacy.
You mentioned to me before the interview that at some point, I'm not sure when exactly, but you were discussing these issues, but you were booed. You were booed by an audience. Yes. Because of your views?
Yes. So I lectured on all of that. And one day I had in a hospital a group of cancer patients. Now, all of them were pretty far ahead, far along and with their disease. And when I talked about privacy, they said, "What are you talking about? We wonder if we have 3 months to live or 6 months to live or 9 months. We want anyone to know that we have this disease, and we would like that companies are selling our names We would like to know about any research, about any new medication, about anything what is out there. And we don't want to get to a situation where we die in the end, and on the graveyard dance, he can rest in peace because his privacy was secured. We really want to make the best out of the situation. We don't believe in privacy. In one case, I had to leave a room through a back door because people got so angry at me.
It's interesting you mentioned that, because today is the 5th of March, and in the media the last couple of days, there's been a story about a surgery or a surgeon in Poland who has successfully rehabilitated a person who had their spinal cord severed. And now they're opening a website where they're going to request people from around the world to send in applications to go to Poland and have surgery done. So it's, I know it's not quite related to security and privacy, but to your point, people want to know what treatments are out there. And now these people who have had severe injuries are going to be sending whatever information they can over the internet as fast as they can in the hope of being selected.
Yes, if you are in a situation like this, you are not worried about what you are sending to Poland or what they are doing with your information. You really want help, and that's really the overriding situation for patients.
I suppose, though, there is a significant difference between privacy and security. So, for example, I might not care that someone knows what my prescription is, but what I care about is that it stays correct and accurately recorded and someone doesn't interfere with it. But I, being in technology, I know that it's rare if you're a hacker that you're going to get in when you have only read-only access. You're probably going to have read-write access. So where do you fall on the whole privacy versus data integrity?
Well, data integrity is priority. If the data integrity is not being kept, thousands of patients are being harmed. If we look at privacy, we really have to look more, what is a data breach? And I, after I had been chased out by patients, I spent some time in my institute with some people to really look into the details of data protection rules and at the same time, the whole privacy issues. And I changed my mind. I have been a very different person in regard to the attitude to privacy and so on in many ways. First of all, we need to look at hacking. Most of what we heard and what we mentioned is when individuals are hacking databases. Now, our Medical Records Institute, being in Boston, being called Medical Records Institute, was a sport for all the students at MIT and many universities to hack our database. We had in a period of a month, 7 hacking instances. We had over a year, over 45 hacking instances, successful instances. I'm not talking about those where our security guys have been avoiding that, because it was a game. People would try to get in there. What did they get out of it? One could write an article and say, here, an institution has been hacked so many times. Of course, we do not have, or we didn't have, medical records of patients or so on. But the name itself made it a game for any student to get into that system. So we really need to look at that. Every time I walk through any city in the United States or anywhere in the world, and I look at the mail person, when I go through Boylston Street in Boston and I see in the morning that there's a mail cart, the mail person has gone inside the building, leaving maybe 50, sometimes 100, 200 letters. This is a data breach in the same way, because it's out of control, as what we have on computers. But no one writes about it. No one cares about it. When someone lost a CD with patient information on it, the hospital was fined and had a major fine to pay.
It could be millions sometimes.
Millions, yes, in some cases. And we need to put this in perspective. So loss of data is not automatically any damage done. What we really need to look at is, what is the harm done by breaches? And I have spent substantial time when there were any incidents in Massachusetts or in the United States. And I would go there and I would look at some of those. And in most cases, it was a situation where someone knew someone. For instance, if a young girl was brought into the office by her mother, who was a head nurse, and she found on the computer, of course, the little sticky note with the key to the database. So when someone goes into a database of all the town's patients, what would she want? She only wants to look up the record of her teacher, of her neighbors, of a local store, of the people she knew. And there she could do embarrassment. She could tell them, I know about what your problems are. But anyone else, she couldn't really relate to, because it's not bringing any harm to anyone. So we need to realize the difference between violations where an individual finds out. The worst cases are, for instance, where a couple who are both working in the hospital are getting divorced. So the nurse, who is the ex-wife, would have tried everything to get of her former husband into the medical record, and vice versa. So it's more of a personal situation we have to realize, and it's a very, very small percentage. So when we are talking about millions of records being violated and being opened up, in most cases there's no harm done, or very little harm done in such situations.
But do you see, though, that the imposition of these large fines is a way of trying to, I suppose, force or encourage companies to provide proper security? I think it's important that there be a penalty if you've been sloppy. And as we can see, lots of companies are sloppy. In the last few weeks, one of the big Linux distributions was hacked, and a Trojan was inserted into an ISO that people downloaded. And in the medical field a few weeks ago, I think it was a hospital in California had one of these ransom viruses appear on their computer. Maybe it was due to that sticky note on a computer, and someone got a password and someone decided to remote in. I can see the benefit of imposing significant fines, even if in that particular case there wasn't damage done, as a way of discouraging sloppiness in future.
I'm glad you're mentioning that. The most important part is that we need to safeguard information. And secondly, we need to give everyone the right and the possibility to safeguard their own information. If an individual patient is really concerned about his or her medical record, they should have options that they can really safeguard it against anyone else. For instance, politicians, people who are in the public eye, and so on and so on. At the same time, we need to have safeguarding everywhere else, and have to make sure that we are not letting providers be sloppy about the overall approach with information. It's very important to have that. But there is a difference between regulating, and what we should be talking about is the HIPAA regulations. The author of HIPAA is Dr. Braithwaite, is a good friend of mine. When that was written in the 90s, it had 256 times the word reasonable in the legislation. What we have in the meantime is an army of consultants, lawyers, and others who have tried to interpret what was originally meant as reasonable into some situations where we now see the damaging side of data protection.
One of the things that I remember coming across with regard to HIPAA, I was doing some work for a company that had to be HIPAA compliant. Their computers could not support the connection of external hard disks. So you couldn't, the idea being in the 90s, you couldn't walk away with a lot of records. But there was no problem having my OneDrive or my Google Drive connected with 100 gigabytes. So it seems like even the word reasonable might have been limited to what the technology supported at the time it was written, as opposed to what technology supports now.
But what I really am trying to bring to the forefront of people's minds is that we need security. But at the same time that we say, because of security, we do not allow emails, we force providers to send information by fax, Now, if you look into detail, fax is not secure either. We have legal cases in Texas and other states where someone covered up a fax or sent it to the wrong address and all kinds of things. That we do not allow email, that we do not allow text messages is really hurting us. So at the same time, we do not allow providers who are not directly proven as being part of a case to give their input into a case. And therefore, we have the dark side of data communication, where because of privacy, we do have a limited communication in the healthcare field. We need to realize that we cannot allow a situation similar to an airplane where some of the information is not provided to the pilot. The physician or the physician team, and in some cases in hospitals, that can be a large number. It can be, I know of a case where in a university hospital, 123 people were taking care of one patient. If you get to such a situation, HIPAA does not allow a free information flow among all of those, particularly also outside of a hospital, if specialists have done things before and so on. This is really doing harm. So what we really have to realize, on the one hand, we need security, we need system security, we need all of these issues. At the same time, we have situations where communication is being limited and where we have some of the problems because of that. The media has reported that in Boston alone, in Boston hospitals, over 5 years, there were 1,744 patient deaths because of communication failures. And I blame part of it on data protection.
I was just going to ask, yeah, does it break it down into shift changes or lack of data? Because I mean, it isn't necessarily, sometimes it isn't even just the lack of the sharing. Sometimes the systems are incompatible. I remember someone telling me in the healthcare field that back in the 70s and 80s, every hospital decided to have a custom database with a custom protocol, with a custom communication. Has that changed or is that still a problem? Like HL7 is one of the standards, but...
Yeah, but HL7 has very little for security, and the security really goes along with HIPAA and then what has been interpreted on state levels and by individual hospitals.
So just sorry, listeners, HL7, am I right in saying it's a, is it a storage protocol or a communications protocol for exchanging information?
HL7 is a messaging standard which governs most of the communication between hospitals and providers.
Another area, are you worried at all about the way a lot of, let's say, medical companies, device companies are getting into things like insulin pumps, pacemakers, which have remote control systems? Because there was a gentleman named Barnaby Jack, a well-known hacker who presented at DEF CON and Black Hat and a number of things. He's known for a thing called jackpotting, where he was able to remotely have ATMs spit out money. But he also did a thing where he was able to override the controls on a insulin pump from maybe 100 meters and get it to deliver a dose which would be enough to kill a person. Now, I'm not going to mention which company, just for my own sake, in case anyone would ever come after me, but it's a pretty well-known medical device company. And one of the odd things is, I remember watching that video, and now he did it on stage, and now I can't find that video anymore. But that's a slightly side point. But there are companies whose expertise is not telecommunications, wireless protocols, security, devices, embedded systems, and yet they're building things like remote control insulin pumps. Is this something that people should be concerned about?
Well, of course one should be concerned about, but one needs to understand that there's a whole army of thousands of bioengineers who are working in hospitals. There's also the FDA and many standards organizations who are looking into these issues and trying to monitor it. In general terms, all of this is possible. The same way as you could hack into an autonomous car of a future where you don't have a driver, and people have to safeguard to make sure this can't happen. How often will it happen? If someone wants to hack into a pacemaker or into any medical device, you have to have a specific interest in killing someone. And it's a rare situation. It can happen. It probably will always happen. Because we have to realize, as we are talking about healthcare security can only be as secure as banks. And I have been speaking to audiences in banks. They've been trying for hundreds of years to be safe, but there are still people who break into a bank occasionally. And the bank is patching up everything, and it cannot happen. And it's now not only that people break into a bank and take actual money away. The main issue is really that it's happening online, that sometimes it's internal people who work at the bank, who transfer big amounts of money to another country and it disappears. So the same way as the banks have a race where they patch up any security leak or any hole which comes, someone else will come up with something else. The same is going to happen in healthcare. It will never be fully secure.
Obviously, there's a massive difference between, let's say, if my bank is compromised and $1,000 is taken, the bank will return that money to me and they'll take the loss or they'll have their insurance. But you know, a person whose health is injured by something like this is significantly different or killed. Now, to your point that people wouldn't necessarily have an interest in doing it, I agree that there are going to be very few people with the technical skills who are in the proximity of someone that they can cause harm to and that they intend to. Or if they were of that mind, they'd find another way of doing it anyway. But a little while ago, you said that in 1 month, your database was hacked 7 times and in 1 year, 40 something times. People seem to view this as sport. And I know this is a leap, but given that there will be devices that will be hackable and people will know about them, would you in any sense be concerned that people might view that as a target just because they can?
Yes, of course. All of us have to be concerned of ours. I have been a digital citizen for maybe 8 or 9 years. That means since that time, I'm doing only online banking internationally, nationally. My bank account has been cleaned out twice. So, you know, I looked at my bank account
twice.
And everything had gone. I had a situation where I was traveling and my bank manager reached me and said, there's someone from Romania trying to take all the money out of your account. Are you dealing with those people? And I had to say no, and the trouble was averted. But the situation is that will always happen. And that's why we need to look at the overall context. That healthcare is now a small part of the overall surveillance in the digital society. You walk down the street of any major city, there are cameras everywhere. You have to be aware that your information, whether you read books online or what you do on the website or what you do in transactions, is being recorded. And there's surveillance everywhere. There is a damaging and hurtful use of data everywhere. You have to be aware that your HR department knows more about you in regard to behavioral posts on Facebook or social or others, personal ratings, any of it for job seekers. So what we have to realize that outside the healthcare field, we are really getting into a very dangerous situation as humans and where the government is going to survey us and regulate us and monitor us in many ways. And that's really scary.
If there was going to be some changes, I'd say, to the data protection laws or regulations, what would you like to see change?
Well, I have for a moment to go to a different field. At the same time as we are moving into information society, we need to realize that there's a whole new way of looking at data and what is going on there. We had for hundreds of years we drive for freedom. We don't want a dictator or ruling governments like communist governments and other dictators, that we have no freedom whatsoever. This is being transferred in our days to information. We want information freedom. We want transparencies. What this means is if I make an application to a company, I want to know why it's not being considered. If I make an application to City Hall, I want to know why it's being turned down or accepted. I want to know from all the organizations what they do with my data, whether it's insurance, whether it's bank, whether it's someone else. So we really need to look at a very different way that over the next 20, 30, 50 years, we really want the freedom of information. We want total transparency. If we want such kind of transparency, we may have to be ready for transparency ourselves. There are also people I should mention, and I don't agree with all of them, but some are saying people who really want that data protection is kept on their personal information have something to hide. Now, we don't know, it's another issue, and it goes much further. But what the world we really have to focus in over the next 10 or 20 years is information symmetry. Symmetry means that everyone has access to information, and it's not that some people are being kept in the dark and others have all the information. The typical example of no symmetry is when you buy a used car at a used car dealer. The used car dealer knows everything about that lemon of a car he or she is trying to sell you, and you as a buyer know nothing. When you go to healthcare, it's the doctor and the providers who know everything, and the patient, in many cases, knows very little. We are moving in general terms to a situation where we really want to get to a point where there's symmetry in information, so that we know not only if information is being out there about, let's say, myself, but what are people doing with it? What is the transparency? What is a hospital doing? If a hospital might say, we have sold some of that information to a pharmaceutical company, they should notify me. And I might say, it's okay if I'm a cancer patient. Maybe I find out about any alternative medication. My doctor doesn't know. But I want to know. I don't want the companies to deal with it. So this needs to be changed. That is a major part in the whole situation. So what we really want is to get to a transparency from schools, governments, companies, and the same in healthcare. And what we really want in that situation is that in the future, information is more free, that we do not have situations where, for instance, communication between the patient and the doctor is regulated because of privacy or data protection rules, that they cannot send emails and cannot send text messages. These are just tiny examples. The data protection measures themselves cause substantial additional costs and trouble to keep everything just in the right place. We need to find a balance. How can all of it be done in the right way?
Any final notes on this topic before we wrap up, Peter?
So I want our listeners to keep in mind that our privacy is being curtailed every day in many ways outside of the healthcare field. And our lives will be made very difficult. As a result, we will be regimented and regulated and monitored. The quality of life will be very different. Now, if you apply that to healthcare, we have to see that the current data protection is limited. We are not protecting the people. We are protecting the data flow. And we need to look at the harm being done by violations of privacy. And we need to look at what is to be expected in regard to the quality of care and how much is being affected by data protection. A national initiative is needed to adjust the current data protection efforts and change them into meaningful person protection. I think this summarizes what I would like to get across.
Thank you. Peter Wegermann, thank you very much for joining me from Berlin.
The opening music was The Return by Nisi 23 from the album 11 and 12, and the closing music was Berzarenplatz by Mabafu from the album Little Boy.